Sega is delisting a bunch of their classic games next month, probably because they'll want to sell them to you at a higher price. That being said, other companies are now cool with game preservation, even helping with it. Tonight is November 17th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk.
Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters.
I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it.
Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Hey, everybody. I'm back. Hashtag AARP podcast. AAR podcast. Yes. That's it. Yeah. And I don't know what I'm doing. I've been gone for like 2 weeks and I'm not sure all my buttons work. But you know what? We're going to try this. And we're going to see how long I can be here tonight. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a rusty, I guess, an AARP edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice Geeks Network, welcome. Thank you so much. We do try to tape the show just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, but it is Twitch. So, Rob Roberts in chat even says, Bobby doesn't give a... He's gotten some sunshine this week. Yes, I've gotten some sunshine. I'll talk about that in a second. But this is a podcast, so I understand. If you can't be here live on Sunday nights, we do have a Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. That is where I am throughout the week. And you can also suggest some stories to talk about on the show. We actually didn't get to all the stories for the show roll because a lot of other stuff happened in the last 2 weeks. But yes, as Rob points out, I got some sunshine this week. I tend to not... advertise like when I'm out of the house. I try not to do that. And you know, I don't want to dox myself while I'm on vacation. I'll talk about it when I get back. I was on the high seas. I was sailing on the high seas, which I understand is actually a controversial topic because when I bring it up in some spaces, they're like, no, that's terrible. You're going to die. So I was on a cruise, which some people, you know, I have heard the whole floating petri dishes, and wow, that's terrible, because I was on the ship, the cruise ship that you see on TV that everybody looks at and is like, that looks like a dystopian nightmare. And I had fun on my dystopian nightmare. It was the Royal Caribbean Icon of the Seas, which is the largest cruise ship in the world right now. You've probably, if you watch linear television, you've probably seen a commercial for it. I didn't report much about gaming. I've done that. I've been on Royal Caribbean ships before and shown the arcade. It was the same stuff that I've shown before. But what I do want to share is, and I didn't really get good video of this, because I tried, but my phone, I couldn't get my phone turned on in time. But on the Royal Caribbean ships, yes, there's ice shows. They've got an ice skating rink on there, and they put on ice shows. And, you know, it's them, you know, and it's an ice show to music and everything, and I just about died laughing. I didn't, because I am more refined than that. But I'm going to see if this can come through here. This was part of the ice show. See if you can hear what I'm hearing in this.
Transforming into the most spectacular jewel of them all, the diamond.
Okay, so it's going to cut. It changed here, but the second video. This is a high-end cruise ship. So they had the Halo theme mashed up with Carmina Burana for a portion of the ice show. I just about died laughing. There was a lot more of it. Like the first video, it had actually been like 30 seconds of just the Halo chant. And by the time I got my camera turned, my phone turned on and the video on, it had switched to the next thing. But then they brought it back and mashed it up with Carmina Burana. So, it was a fun night show. It was all about the elements, and we're talking about like the elements of the periodic table. So it was all like sciencey based. The juggler was actually kind of cool on it. I actually enjoyed the juggler, and I didn't video it for all y'all. But and Dark Tessia says I was going to say that sounds like Halo. Yes, it actually was Halo. It didn't just sound like Halo. It was. So it's the first time I've heard video game music used in a very serious high end ice skating production on a cruise ship. So, and S. Jared Matt says, I went on a cruise when I was a kid, but I've seen the cruise ships are like miniature cities now with how much they pack in them. Yeah. And so, real quick, Icon of the Seas, it's very expensive. But there's a lot to do on it. I don't even know if I found every place on there. I did do the escape room on it when talking about gaming. And this was actually the first week of that escape room. So cruise ships, especially Royal Caribbean, now actually have escape rooms on board. I've done one on the Oasis of the Seas last year, and it's actually some of the best escape rooms I've ever done. And the one that was on Icon of the Seas literally opened this week. In fact, we actually met the game master that actually like created the game because he was on the ship to watch the first groups kind of go through the escape room. I'm not going to spoil anything about the escape room, but basically it's a docking of it's a space. You're on the space station, and you're trying to dock with the space station, and then you're trying to do stuff to not die while on the space station. And it was really well done. A lot of the escape rooms on Royal Caribbean ships are harder than other escape rooms that you'll find on land that are probably in your city. And it was pretty expensive. We were like, wow, $50 a person for an escape room, which, you know, compared to everything else on that cruise ship, that's, you know, par for the course. But it was really well done. It uses a lot of electronics. It uses a lot of cameras and microphones and speakers and wires and stuff. So it was... it was actually really good. So if you are in a, you know, a great financial situation, thankfully I'm pretty lucky right now, and you can go on the Icon of the Seas, absolutely book the escape room that's on there. Also, the escape room that's on Oasis of the Seas, and I believe it's also on Odyssey of the Seas. I haven't been on there. That one's really good, too. If it's like the Apollo launch, if you see an escape room about the Apollo launch, that one's really good, too. So those are actually some of my favorite escape rooms I've done, and I've done multiple ones around the country. But anyway, this is not a cruise podcast. This is a video game podcast. And when I got back, because I got back yesterday, I hurried, and because I didn't play a Nintendo Switch when I'm on that boat. I came back and I was like, okay, Digital Eclipse has things that I want, and Digital Eclipse has things that I really, really, really want to try. And they all came out, like everything came out this week. So the first thing that I picked up was the shorter thing of the two, was the second DLC for Atari 50. And I was trying to find the trailer for this right before the show, and I can't find the trailer for this DLC. I can find the trailer for the other DLC, but I can't find the trailer for this DLC. But this is the DLC of the first console war. And this is because in May of 2024, Atari purchased the IP and a lot of the games for the Mattel and Television. So then they came and said, okay, now we're going to talk about, we can actually add some Intellivision type stuff. They didn't add any Intellivision games, but what they did is the second DLC that just came out for $7.99, I believe is what it is. And the second one is all about the console war between Intellivision and Atari. And it's got about probably, I'd say, 20 to 30 minutes worth of video. They have some people that were on the Intellivision side in terms of the business side, like kind of like the head programmer at the time, one of the programmers that worked on some of the cartridges for Atari, because really they were talking about the games that are on there were the ones that Mattel made for the Atari console, because You know, why make games for only 2 million possible consoles, because that's how many install, that was the install base in the Intellivision, when you could also make games for the 10 million Atari consoles that are out there. So why make it make things for only 2 million when you can do 12 million? And so they actually had a, Mattel actually had a division called M Studio that made Intellivision properties into Atari 2600 games. And it was all of the games were all of those games, those M Studio games. So they were Intellivision games made for the Atari 2600. And in the videos, it actually goes into the fact that, like, the Atari 2600 had to be 60 frames a second because of the way that the architecture worked. Every game was 60 frames a second because if you weren't 60 frames a second, you couldn't operate. You had to have everything in 60 frames a second. So they actually talked about some of the architectural differences between the Intellivision and the Atari 2600 and about how, like, the Intellivision had the better graphics, but they just weren't speedy. And it went into some of the George Plimpton ads, the television ads, and then Atari's rebuttal ad, which I don't remember seeing. I remember seeing George Plimpton ads. I didn't remember seeing Atari's ads. But basically, Atari's like, I went to the Intellivision to play Missile Command, and they don't have Missile Command. I went to the Intellivision to play Asteroids. They don't have Asteroids. Basically, they were like, yeah, they got sports, but they don't have the arcade games. That was the rebuttal. So I went through probably, it was about 20, 30 minutes, I believe, of videos, which was neat. The footnote that they had at the end about Atari purchasing Intellivision did mention Keith Robinson of the Blue Sky Rangers. He purchased the Intellivision IP in 1997. And then in May of 2024, Atari purchased the rights. It did not say who they were purchasing it from. They didn't mention the person who got the rights from Keith Robinson. Didn't mention any of that stuff. It just went straight from Keith Robinson to Atari now owns it. So if you were wondering how they were going to handle that, that's how they're handling it right now. They so the games that were actually part of it, they had a bunch of the M Studio games, including some that were not released. And they actually there was some actually some neat stuff. There was a game that was kind of like the D&D, AD&D game on television. And it actually used two joysticks because the second joystick was what you use to check your inventory and check your map and stuff. So you played mainly with the first joystick, but you used the second joystick to open your inventory, check the map, things like that, check your status and everything. And you even put your name in. That was one of the things is like at the beginning, it asks what your name is. So you put your name and then it actually starts calling you by your name. In the version in Atari 50, obviously, they map that second joystick to buttons on the controller. So you don't need to actually have two controllers. So that was neat. The problem with these games, though, is that a lot of them, especially the ones that are prototypes, were made for two players. They don't have anything for one player. And Digital Eclipse didn't do anything to make them work with one player. There's no... use a bad term nowadays, but there's no AI that they program to take as the second player. So if you do not have a second controller, if you do not have a second player, you actually can't play, I'd say, half of the games that are in this DLC. So that is something to know. They are games that are some prototypes, but also they actually had some games that they didn't talk about at all in the videos that are on there, like Hardball. For one of the early Atari 8-bit computers. And Hardball is a baseball game. And if you've never played Hardball, you have most likely seen Hardball. And I can say that with some confidence. Because if you've ever watched this movie called The Princess Bride, Fred Savage's character, when the grandpa is telling him the story, is playing Hardball. That's the game he is playing. So the game that is in The Princess Bride is the one that is in this collection. However, it looks like it only works with two players. So maybe I didn't turn it on, the one-player mode, for whatever reason for that. But that's in there. But a lot of the sports games like require two players. And they made them for couch co-op. And there's no other way to play it other than couch co-op. And... So if you want to play the soccer game, you can actually play the soccer game. You can score the first goal, and then it'll just sit there and wait for the second player to kick off the ball. So there's no two-player stuff. And there's like a sword fighting, they call it laser fight, laser swords or something. It's lightsabers. But you need two players for that. You need two players for the baseball game and the football game that they made for the Atari 2600. You need two players for all of these things. And I think that if this was more of a full product rather than a DLC, I would have liked to have seen some type of AI that takes over as the second player, something that is not part of the ROM, because obviously they're just playing ROMs, but something that would actually take as AI for the second player. And I think we're getting to that point where we can actually do that now, with some of the advancements in some of the learning stuff. And I'm not going to talk about Gen AI or anything like that, not talking about GPT, but there are other advancements in some of these things that they could make something that could play these old games. Yeah, so I really liked it. It was interesting to see some of the talk about the Intellivision and some of their side, and they talked about like how, you know, Mattel was a toy company and they wanted to destroy Atari, and the programmers were like, why do we want to destroy Atari? Like they're cool people. So it was fun. It was interesting. The other game that came out from Digital Eclipse finally this week is usually a day one purchase for me, but I wasn't around on day one with internet, and that's Tetris Forever. And Tetris Forever is the Gold Master Series number 3, and it is of Tetris. So if you've seen Tetris before, or you've read up on Tetris so far, I haven't seen anything new in it. I haven't actually gone through, I think I've gone through like 2 videos of it, because I got it like 3 hours ago, and then I had to come here. But they do have a bunch of variations of the games, including a recreation of the original Russian version of it on the Electronica 60, I believe, which they do say is a recreation. So it's not, I don't even think they have the original ROM. They don't have an emulator. They just recreated it. They have a couple of the MS-DOS versions, including one that I remember playing that said they never actually released this version. This was just passed around on floppy disks. And I'm like, I remember that version. I probably downloaded it off of a BBS at some point. They do have some of the Famicom games. They don't have the ubiquitous NES version or the Game Boy version that we know, but they have other versions that released on Famicom and Super Famicom. The one that I was most excited to try again was Tetris Battle Gaiden, and I believe that's the name of it. And because I played it from my friend who was in Japan, so I actually played it back then. He had it, and I played it a lot. And the nice thing, they don't translate it on the fly, so they didn't change the ROM for that or any of the other Japanese versions. They didn't change the ROM, but they do actually have like a walkthrough that you can go through that they say, okay, one player, two player options, here's what the options do. Because a lot of the Digital Eclipse stuff, they'll have the instruction manual. You can flip through the instruction manual, but it's in Japanese. So they have a separate section that actually talks about here's what each character does, here's their attacks, here's what you'd need to do that. So they did a really good job with that while preserving it. Now, I will say this. The emulator that Digital Eclipse is using for the Super Famicom sucks. Because there's a lot of slowdown on the main menu of Tetris Battle Gaiden. Now, I haven't tried all the other games. There's several other Super Famicom games in the collection. Like I said, I got it like 3 hours ago, so I didn't get to do too much with it. But even the menu has some drastic slowdown. And I didn't see it that much in the gameplay, but like the menu and some of that stuff, and I'm like, wow. I mean, I don't remember. Like, I've played emulators, and I've even played this particular game on emulator a couple times, and I don't remember that slowdown. So I don't know if that's something Digital Eclipse can work on. I don't know if it's just the Switch version. I'm playing it on the Nintendo Switch. I don't know if there's slowdown on the PC version or the PlayStation version or anything like that. But I was kind of shocked that that made it through, that there's that much slowdown in the Super Nintendo game. So far, that's what I've seen with it. So I did play the new version of Tetris that they made, Tetris Time Warp, and essentially the quote-unquote gimmick of Tetris Time Warp is that once you clear enough lines, you will get a piece that you cannot trade out, because that I had a piece that I wanted to use instead when this block came down. And when you place it, once you clear a line that has that block in it, it takes you to one of the other games. And then you will have something that you will need to do in 16 seconds. So if you get Bombtris, the bomb one, you have to explode a large bomb in 16 seconds, one of the big bombs. And sometimes it doesn't give you a big bomb, so you have to create a big bomb and then explode it in 16 seconds, which I haven't been able to do. And another one was like, it took me back once to the Electronica 60 version. It's like clear two lines, and it's a different pattern than what you have on your normal board. It's kind of like a puzzle type thing. So you try to do that, and then if you do that, you get even more points. If you don't, you still get some points. And then it takes you back to the board that you've been playing on. And that's kind of the gimmick of Tetris Time Warp. I have not played it multiplayer, and I just played it single player once, and I didn't even play it all the way to the end. I had to stop, so I haven't actually, like, I haven't walled out yet on it. I had to quit, but it was interesting. They also had Hattress, and there is one game that's not Tetris, and they didn't talk about this. There is one game that ain't Tetris in Tetris Forever. There is a Famicom version of Go, the Japanese game Go, with the whites and the blacks and stuff like that. Because that was the game that Hank Rogers, who was the person who brought Alexei Pajitnov, the creator of Tetris, to the U.S., and is basically the Tetris company is Hank Rogers and now his daughter and Alexei Pajitnov. He made a version of Go first before Tetris, and that version of Go for the Famicom is in this collection as well. So if you want to play some Go in your Tetris Forever, it's just right there in the middle, and then the rest is all like Hattress and Bombtris and Super Tetris 2 and things like that. There is a lot of good stuff. Obviously, your favorite version of Tetris is probably not going to be in it. I will say, in the like 10 minutes of video I've watched from it, they have already had the dude from Enhanced Games, Rez, Tetris Effect. They actually had a bunch of stuff from Tetris Effect on there. But he already showed up and said a couple lines. Mizuguchi. Thank you, Rob Roberts in chat. Mizuguchi's already shown up for a couple seconds, so I assume he's going to be in a lot more as we go along. So they are acknowledging a lot of the games that are not in this collection. So and I have absolutely seen an NES and a Game Boy, and it's all there, and you know they're not blocking it out. Granted, I am playing it on a Nintendo Switch, but I would imagine that I'll probably see other consoles later on. And Dark Tasia says, I heard the absence of Tengen or Atari Tetris because it's owned by Warner Brothers. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't gone through to see how exhaustive the collection is in terms of the lore and the history, but what I've seen so far, it's a good mix, which is what I think they were going for. They weren't trying to go for the definitive collection of every single Tetris game ever made, even though Acid Tetris is a game that I worked on. It was a freeware game from like 1998 that could have been in this collection. But no, they didn't use that. That game's not in this collection. Rob says, Rob's biggest complaint is they spend most of the time in the documentary on games we can't play in the collection. Like, I get how we are here, but it's disappointing. And I don't know if, like, the thing about that, and that's totally valid complaint, but I bet if they didn't talk about those, we would just have that complaint in the opposite. Like, why are you only talking about the games that are in the collection? Why aren't you acknowledging any of these other games that are out there that shaped Tetris? Why are you only concentrating on the ones in here? So we would basically, damned if you do, damned if you don't on that. And Rob even says, yes, 1,000%. It is what it is. So I think that talking about them and acknowledging them is the way to go. And I mean, Tetris Effect, it's on sale now. Like, you can get Tetris Effect. Tetris Grandmaster, I don't know if that's actually mentioned in later parts of the documentary. You can still get Tetris Grandmaster. They're reselling those. Orico is still working on those. So, and a Nintendo Switch Online already has the Game Boy version of Tetris is already in the Game Boy one. And they are adding the NES Tetris, the one that we all know, is coming in Nintendo Switch Online. And Rob Roberts just say it goes right up to the kid beating the high score at the end of last year. So that's where it is. And yes, Tetris Grandmaster is mentioned, Tetris Effect, and the kid, the blue shooty crash in the game. It goes into that. So far, I'm very happy with it. And you know, I'm a fan of everything Digital Eclipse does in the Gold Master series so far. They haven't steered me wrong yet. But I will let you know after a couple hours of sitting with the video there. Let's talk about some of the other game preservation news. This is all going to be game preservation. I had another story in here, and I'm like, no, that story doesn't fit, so we're not going to talk about it. But Sega is going to be delisting some games very, very soon. And it's kind of interesting because there was a story that we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, about how a politician played Crazy Taxi on Twitch, and the only reason he could play Crazy Taxi on Twitch is because it was available to download as a classic title from Sega. Well, if they had tried to do that next month, he would not have been able to do that. Because Sonic Stadium reports that in unfortunate news, Sega's support website has announced that a lengthy library of their classic games are being delisted from all major digital platforms, including a handful of classic Sonic titles. The Sega Classics FAQ support page notes that the titles will be delisted in 1 month on December 6th. Existing purchases will remain playable, but they won't be available to purchase and afterwards individually or in bundles. The broadest delisting will impact Sega Genesis Mega Drive's Classics, the 16-bit collection of over 50 retro games on every current major platform. This collection has long been controversial for running a demanding launcher and introducing input lag on some platforms, but it currently stands as the widest selection of Genesis games currently available. This includes Sonic 1, 2, 3D Blast, Pinball, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, Flicky, and Restar, among many, many others, including like Phantasy Star 2, 3, 4, things like that. Several other classic titles will also be delisted from Steam and Xbox Marketplace next month, most notably the loosely titled Dreamcast Collection. The only Sonic game that will be impacted by the Xbox port of Sonic the Fighters, but other classics like Nights into Dreams, Sega Bass Fishing, Crazy Taxi, Jet Set Radio, and Space Channel 5 Part 2 are all on the chopping block. At this moment, it's unclear as to why those titles are being delisted. Online speculation points to last year's Power Surge reveal, showing that Sega's renewed interest in bringing back classic franchises, but unlike recent delistings in the wake of Sonic Origins and Sonic Cross Sonic Generations, no updated versions of these games have been announced. We are certainly overdue for updated emulation and porting of all these titles, but every one of them returning feels improbable. The FAQ does not cite the current ports of Sonic Adventure and Adventure 2 on Steam and Xbox for delisting, nor the Sega Ages ports by M2 on Switch, such as the first Phantasy Age or Phantasy Star. Sega Ages Phantasy Star. It is unclear if the titles of the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack will be impacted, as the FAQ says that select individual classic titles will still be playable. So remember, if you have a expansion pack for Nintendo Switch Online, you can have a lot of Genesis games, and they're in there. Podculture in chat says Dreamcast Mini, just a wish. You never know. Maybe they're doing that, but a lot of these are really the Genesis games, and they already have a Genesis Mini. They have two Genesis Mini, right? Do we have two or just one? I can't remember. Anyway, I think we have two now. But the main one is that Sega Genesis Mega Drive Classics, and I actually have this is like a free title, and then you bought, especially on Steam, it was a free title, and then you could buy games piecemeal, like 99 cents each. And initially, it had the Sonic games. Those Sonic games were delisted like years ago, because I actually have one of the Sonic games on there, and you can't buy it anymore. It's not one of the ones that are in there anymore. But what was interesting about that is, especially on PC, and here you go. Podculture, are you ready to drink? Are you ready to drink, Podculture? Are you ready to drink? The Steam version had VR. So you could actually play in VR, which is a little bit, that's part of the overkill that some people were talking about, that they had a problem with the classic, is that there's this front-end launcher that, you know, has a 3D room, and you're playing on a TV in the room. It's not just the game. Well, you could actually play it in VR, and you could play any of those games in VR. And what you could do on Steam, which a lot of people abused, is that it had Steam Workshop support. So what people could do is they could just put in a different ROM as you, which the idea, they intended it to be like, oh, you could put in like trainers or cheats into existing games, but people would just wholesale replace the ROM. They're like, you need to have this game, and this Steam Workshop download changes the game to something else completely. And that is what you would what you could do on Steam, and so you could play in VR in this this 3D room your games on Genesis. You can even like reach out, pick up the cartridge, put it in. I don't know if that's actually still working. I haven't tried it recently, but I know it worked at the time. So that's why I'm sitting here going, maybe I do want to just go ahead and buy the bundle of the games that are left and before they delist it. So I'm going to check on that. But December 6th is going to be the time that all those games are going to be delisted, including Crazy Taxi, which recently got a big bump. Very, very, very big bump. But in terms of other game preservation, we don't say that many nice things about Epic Games recently because of the Epic Game Store, which, by the way, another nice thing, if you're into Castlevania, go to the Epic Game Store by, I think, like the end of the week or something. They're giving away the Castlevania collection for free right now. That's the free game on Epic Game Store, so go ahead and grab that. If you have an Epic Game Store account, you're cool with that. So go ahead and grab it. I grabbed it today. Game Developer reports that Epic Games has given the green light for the Internet Archive to host installation files for Unreal and its immediate follow-up Unreal Tournament. According to a post within the old Unreal Discord server and spotted by Reset Era, the archiving website now hosts images of the two games' original discs. Players can download these disc image files individually or use old Unreal's previously released Windows-only installers for the games to automatically download and install the archives files, in turn making the two arena shooters fully playable again. Both games were pulled from sale years ago, but with Epic's approval, get to live on as a part of video game history. The arena shooter franchise helped establish Epic as a developer, and its various sequels and spinoffs were used to showcase the game engine of the same name. Also, the other, it's kind of funny, I'm going to tie this to my personal life now, as the two games that I actually had music credits for. One we've talked about was Acid Tetris, or Super Acid Block Attack, I think is what it's called nowadays, when they re-released it so Hank Rogers didn't sue him. And the other one was a partial conversion, which was basically a partial mod, of Unreal. And it was made by two brothers who went on to actually work in the industry. One of them's working on the new on Borderlands 4, where he works at Gearbox Software. The other one worked on some of the BioShocks. And now they're both indie game developers. I've actually interviewed one of them before. They were, when they needed some music and they were looking for people in the mod scene and they liked some of my stuff. And I actually wrote like a full, like 12 song soundtrack for this, not really well-made mod. Like they were in high school and I was in college. So like, it's not like I was any better, but, it was in Unreal. It was a partial conversion of Unreal. So they went on to have some fortuitous careers in the game industry, and then I went on my little software thing, and then I do the podcast. So it's kind of cool. I have a kind of a tie to Unreal in that sense because Unreal used the same tracker format that I wrote music in, which meant it was very easy for me to write music for it. I was using all the programs that I already used. I was using, like, in fact, they made two mods. The first one just took songs I had already written with my permission and used them in the game. And then for the second one, we used one of the songs that I had made, and then I wrote a bunch of new songs for it. So it was called a Crescent Moon Squad. I don't even think you can find it anymore. I don't even think it's available anymore. Crescent Moon Squad 1 and 2. So, and Rob Roberts says, little Vogue stuff. Yeah, the same tracker. Yes, it is. Somebody has like recreated it so it works on modern computers, so I don't need my old computer. But yeah, like the theme song for this show was actually written in that same tracker because that's how I know to write music. I don't know how to use modern software. I've got to use software from 1998 to write music. So good on Epic for allowing the Internet Archive to do that, especially because, you know, you need the company's approval for this type of thing. Thanks to what the Copyright Office said. So for the next 3 years, at least the Internet Archive can do this. So the other thing about preservation that we'll talk about is some good old games. The digital storefront that's probably not as popular as Steam, but it's more well-beloved because they don't have DRM on their titles. So if you buy something on GOG, you actually do own it. You don't just purchase a license, you actually own it. Eurogamer reports that GOG has announced a new preservation program. This initiative from the PC platform aims to maintain games compatibility with modern and future systems. The GOG Preservation Program says, quote, time is erasing the games that shaped you. Forgotten, incompatible, unplayable. We can fight back, unquote. So right now, GOG has 100 games currently part of the program. They said, quote, by maintaining these iconic titles, GOG helps you protect and relive the memories that shaped you, DRM-free and with dedicated tech support, unquote. In addition, GOG is sharing a number of preservation stories, including Heroes of Might and Magic 3, which first released over 2 decades ago. GOG revived Heroes of Might and Magic 3 10 years ago, and an update today fixed non-playing intros in Russian and French versions of the games, validated stability, and verified compatibility with Windows 10 and 11. Other titles include the recent Resident Evil bundle, which comprises the original game in the series, as well as Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3. So their post on social media over on X says, quote, with the celebration of GOG's 16th anniversary, we are thrilled to announce our new initiative. We're launching the GOG Preservation Program, an official stamp on classic games that GOG has improved with a commitment of our own resources to ensure their compatibility with modern systems and make them as enjoyable to play as possible. This initiative was created to make games live forever and once again bring the utmost attention to what the center of our work has been for the last 16 years, video game preservation. We begin with the re-release of 100 classic games from our catalog with updated, improved, or quality-tested builds, including masterpieces like Heroes of Might and Magic 3, Resident Evil, and Diablo with Hellfire, unquote. So where GOG is going, instead of, like, libraries, is that GOG's like, no, 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 we'll take your money. We'll take your money for the game, but then we will promise to preserve it. Whereas a library is like, no, 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 you should have access to all these games. So that's where GOG's going a little bit different. GOG is not a non-profit. GOG is absolutely here to make profit. GOG wants to make money. GOG wants your money. And if they can get your money by a commitment to preservation, then that's what GOG's going to do. So good on them for that. Esther and Matt talking about Epic Games says, Epic has done good by the Unreal community. I know they've allowed the community to run fan servers even after the game's main servers have been shut down. I know they did that for Unreal 2K4. I mean, because Epic has just shut down all the other Unreal servers, and it was actually a little bit of a controversy. So the part of the Eurogamer article that I was quoting, I didn't read the part where it's like had a complicated relationship with Unreal. And I think it was the Steam servers, like all the Steam version of the game. They shut down all those servers so you couldn't actually play those games anymore. So it's been kind of complicated. So it's like, and I guess in some ways they've been done good by the Unreal community, but other ways they've actually angered the Unreal community because Epic doesn't really do much with the Unreal franchise anymore. And Dark Tessia says, I was a little sad when the 2015-ish reboot shut down. I was enjoying the new Unreal tournament. Yes. So, yes. And Dark Tessia also says, this story made me happy. Anything that helps with game preservation, I'm happy to approve of. And yes, these are some happy stories. Sega, not so much. But, like, with Digital Eclipse doing what they're doing with the whole museum aspect, that's one aspect. You've got the libraries like the Internet Archive and the Video Game History Foundation, which... The Video Game History Foundation helped with Atari 50 because one of the game that I was talking about with the second controller, the D&D, that game only existed on a prototype cartridge in the developer's house. She found it and they actually got it working again. And it even showed a picture of her, the developer, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she was the developer that worked on the game back in the 80s for the Atari 2600. And she had played it for the first time in 30 years or 40 years at this point. She played it for the first time in 40 years at the Video Game History Foundation because they were able to actually get it working again. So I thought that was pretty cool. So they worked with Digital Eclipse on that. We're going to take a very quick music break. And then we'll preserve your opinions and maybe take some calls. And stuff like that. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
I want to ride my chocobo all day. Can't get it out of my head.
Hey, this is Robbie Damon, the voice of all your favorite anime and video games, and you are participating with the Bobby Black Wolf Show. Have fun, baby!
This sounds like you're having fun.
We are having fun. That was Robbie Damon. I didn't even realize because there's the video bumper. So he's wearing an Atari shirt. So that you know makes sense, right? He's wearing an Atari shirt. So we're good. That fits with the theme for tonight. Yes. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be Robbie Damon, who is the voice of Prompto in Final Fantasy 15, as well as a bunch of other things. All you got to do is contact me, and we'll either do an audio file with just your voice or a video with just you and your voice, and I'll choose which DMCA violation to put behind it so we can preserve the feed and not get it muted. I will choose how much I want to get. We play Music Break, and I do want to say, you know, Questbuster is in our chat. We were talking about music, and everybody in chat was talking about how it's about time to play holiday music because, like, in December, I will play Overclock Remix stuff that is more holiday themed, you know, with sleigh bells and things like that. And I've got a whole folder of just those. And Questbuster, I don't disagree with Questbuster often. And this is one of those times I do. Questbuster says, one of our local radio stations is already playing 24/7 Christmas music. It's nice. And I don't disagree with Questbuster all that often. But on this one, it does. This one I do. Because it's not nice. It is not. We have not had Thanksgiving here in the U.S. yet. And so it should not happen until after Thanksgiving. On that Friday, sure, it's fine. But on November 17th, no. No, that is a big no. I'm going to put a big no on that. So Questbuster's like, it's nice. It is not nice. It is absolutely not nice. And Tire Claw says, one of the houses on my street already has Christmas lights. And that's not nice either. In fact, I will say that there's a neighborhood just up from me. November 1st, they turned on all of the Christmas lights out at the entrance of the neighborhood. And you want to know what that is not nice either. The Halloween hadn't even finished yet all around the world, and they already had their Christmas lights up and were like, yay. And, you know, Mariah Carey's about to come out of containment and come after us all. And no, it's naughty. Thank you, Fifth Dream. It's naughty. So Questbuster is now on the naughty list for thinking that it's nice. It's the night after Thanksgiving. That's when you wait. That's when you wait for it. So coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And they were also around for the past 2 weeks. So maybe there was stuff I missed. But we like to check in with them. And I am going to check, and I'm going to see what Rob believes for this. Is it, you know, is it time for the lights or not? So Sacramento, are you there?
Absolutely no lights until after Thanksgiving.
That's right. See, we are in agreement here. It's all of us against Questbuster. I don't disagree with Questbuster often, but on this one I do. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm refreshed.
I was gonna say you sounded awfully peppy tonight. I wonder why.
I was on a boat for 8 days. Uh-huh. And a week. See, and here's the thing. We got back yesterday. So today was the decompressed day before having to actually enter the real world tomorrow. So I've actually been home for about 24 hours. So that's been kind of nice. Because a lot of times I come back on Sunday or something, and then it's like turn right back around and go back into the real world the next day. No, I had an extra day to wish I was on a boat.
No, we've definitely learned we have to give ourselves the extra day, especially when you consider we have usually cross-country travel to worry about. If we're going out of Florida, we got a, you know, we got a full 5-hour flight instead of an hour and a half or whatever it is to Atlanta.
Yeah. So I was keeping tabs on things because, you know, the boats, like these cruise ships nowadays, they do have internet, and that's actually pretty good. It is courtesy of that guy that we don't really like all that much, but, you know, it works for what it's doing because you need satellite internet, and it's a lot better now than it was 10 years ago, satellite internet. So I kind of kept up with what was going on, but what were some of the big things that I missed talking about?
Probably with the PlayStation 5 Pro launching, you know, there's been, you know, some talk about that and some reviews on the consoles. I actually got to check one out over the weekend briefly. So that was interesting. You know, we'll talk a little bit if it's changed my mind on if it's worth the price of the console. But yeah, I got to see that. And so you've seen Microsoft kind of have several statements come out this week, you know, kind of positioning around that and what the future might look like for Microsoft, including somewhat more insight to that they may actually really be developing a handheld that is maybe their own version of a Steam Deck or a Nintendo Switch, if you will, that's going to be out, you know, maybe not in the immediate future, but something we'll be talking about in probably a couple of years. So that's interesting. And then I'm also taken aback by how much Blizzard news there is this week, because we're getting news out of Warcraft. We're getting news out of, you know, all these different Blizzard properties. In fact, they did a full on relaunch of Warcraft 1, 2, and I think they did 3. I think they actually they remastered the remaster or something. They put a little more polish on it and put that all out on Battle.net this week. Okay. And then with that, they're actually, you know, speaking of Microsoft and, you know, position. One of the Microsoft titles is going to be launching in Battle.net, Avowed, which is going to be very interesting, I think, because, you know, that's we saw where Battle.net was sort of leveraged for Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, you know, LOL, because, you know, the Battle.net audience doesn't tend to be the same people to play Call of Duty, unless you think of Battle.net just simply as a store. I think there's probably a little more to it. But Avowed as an RPG might click a little better for that crowd. So it's going to be interesting to see the strategy behind that. So those are some of the big things I can think of that you missed, at least in this last week, perhaps. Yeah. Trying to think back to the week before. What were some things that we talked about the week before? We were talking about, there was an update in the Pal World lawsuit. I don't know if you saw any of that. That the information came out on, like, what patents were being contested, and it admittedly, it leaves a little bit of a question mark face. It doesn't seem like Nintendo is going after what we assumed they would go after, and they might be going after something really broad, way too broad, in fact. Oh, and that was the other thing on the Switch, because that would have been that night that you missed, or you haven't been able to cover because you didn't do a show, during all the big night here in the States with Red versus Blue IRL. Nintendo subtly just dropped in the middle of the night that, oh yes, the Switch 2 will be fully backwards compatible. Now, of course, we know Nintendo of Japan does not run on a timetable beholden to the U.S. and any political schedule here, but the timing was still very funny. So that information all came out as well. So,
yeah, now when we were talking about the Blizzard stuff, the book that I started reading, I actually had a real book with me, and I didn't get to read too much. On the cruise, but it's the book called Play Nice by Jason Schreier. How do you pronounce his name? I've only read his name, but Jason Schreier from Bloomberg, and it's all about the rise and fall and rise of Blizzard.
Oh, right. Yeah, I knew that was supposed to be coming out, right?
Yes. Yeah, it came out, I think, last month or the month before.
Some real fights behind the scenes with Mike Warheim, it sounds like, and Bobby Kotick going at it, and that's why he resigned, it sounds like.
Yeah, so I haven't gotten that far in the book yet. I've gotten to the part where they talked about, like, their start and, you know, them doing, you know, being, like, freelance people working on other people's games, and then they made the Lost Vikings, and that's basically kind of where I'm at right now. And when they were working on it started going down like the Warcraft versus Diablo folks, because the Diablo folks were a different company in a different city, and this was back in the 90s, so it was hard to collaborate, you know, remotely like that. So it went into some of that, and it's gotten kind of in there. The best anecdote in there was early on, and it's been shared on social media. It's like not a, it's just like a side note. But there was a developer, there was a programmer working there by the name of Andy. And he worked on, like, I think the original Warcraft and stuff. But the crunch was so bad. Like, it was very much a crunch-heavy culture, especially in the 90s over there. And he, like, his dream job was to write video games and write video, you know, do all this stuff. And Andy was like, I'm not doing this crunch culture because, quote-unquote, it wasn't required, quote-unquote. But it was. And he was basically, like, there were people sabotaging him. And all that stuff. This is only like this, like three paragraphs, and I'm kind of paraphrasing it because I don't have the book in front of me. And so it soured him, and he just finally quit in disgust. Like they didn't fire him; they just made it so bad that he quit. And then he decided, you know what? Maybe I don't want to write video games anymore. Maybe I want to write, you know, novels and stuff. And he went on to write this this novel called The Martian, and which became a movie and made like $300 million and. Yeah. He's doing, Andy Weir is doing just fine now, but his dream job was to write video games, and he worked at Blizzard in the 90s, and they basically chewed him up and spit him out, and he left the video game industry and decided to pursue something else, and here we are.
I'm sure a smaller developer would kill to have him write a script or some type of, you know, outline for a potential title, too, especially with the backing of The Martian. It would seem very, like a sci-fi type of game would really want to snatch that up, so.
Yeah.
He could probably get back into it if he wanted to, but completely respect that he probably doesn't want to touch it. I have a friend who I did not meet through this show or anything game industry related. It was something we met through playing a game. He is actually a classic game developer. He worked on something you probably have heard of. And he's told me that I would never touch the games industry again. At this point, he's just kind of over it, basically. So, you know, where it's at now, it's just not what it was in the time he was working in it. And I respect that. Like, it isn't the same.
Oh, I've worked with many former game industry people in my, you know, day job and doing regular stuff. Like, I worked with somebody who worked at Epyx. E-P-Y-X. Mm-hmm. Epyx. Mm-hmm. The Commodore 64 Epyx. He worked there. I've worked with people that were at EA and, you know, all that stuff. And they're like, yeah, no, I'd much rather be doing this boring business software than any of that. And I think what I've heard in the game industry, the phrase that I've heard a couple times is, if you're in the game industry, you either last less than 5 years or you're in it for life. That's it. Because unfortunately, like if you've been in the game industry too long, you can't get employed anywhere else. Other than games, because like no business, you know, you're going to have to go back down to being a junior developer because you don't know those systems. But and it's the same the other opposite direction for anybody that's wondering. I've been in software development for 25 years. No game company would ever touch me, even though I'm a really good programmer. I haven't been a game developer for 25 years. So
you know somebody's going to want a soundtrack with those old, you know, chiptune sound and songs. I bet don't think they could probably pay much, but there might be an indie developer out there that would appreciate some, you know, Acid Tetris too. It could happen.
Maybe, but as a programmer, I'm not going to be able to get a job.
Probably not.
As a programmer, which is my actual like trade. But I'm thankful for those that are still there. I'm thankful for the companies that are still treating their workers right or have started to finally treat their workers right because, like, sometimes you just got to get new leadership in to make things better, and especially to the game companies that are preserving the old games. So what are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Well, we'll take care of some of the other headlines from this week. I think I went over a couple of them just a minute ago, but why don't we also bring up the fact that Half-Life 2 turned 20 this past week, and does that mean we got Half-Life 3? No. Does that mean we got Half-Life 2 Episode 3? No. But we kind of got some interesting sort of stuff around that concept, so you're just going to have to stay tuned to hear a little more about what they did to celebrate the Half-Life 2 anniversary this last week.
All right. And I don't know if you noticed, but I actually got the Blue Sky bot working tonight for the first time.
I saw the test post, but I didn't see the real deals. That's great.
Yeah. So
oh my God, the tidal wave on Blue Sky has been unreal this last week.
And I was out on vacation and couldn't participate all that much because I didn't want to. Everybody's like, post a picture of this. I'm like, I'm not home.
No, enjoy your trip.
Yeah.
Post a picture of your feet up on the deck. And no F's given.
I did post the picture of me. I actually did dox myself. I did tell people I was on vacation just because Like, I was on a Royal Caribbean ship. And sorry, pod culture. Sorry. Drink again. So Royal Caribbean, they are the sponsor of the jerseys for the Inter Miami Soccer Club. That's where Lionel Messi and other players, like main big, huge players from Barcelona play. And they were in the playoffs playing Atlanta United. And because Royal Caribbean is their sponsor, they have watch parties for every single Inter Miami game on the ship. You can't watch any other MLS match but Inter Miami. And everybody's wearing Messi jerseys because they sell Messi jerseys in the store on the ship. And Atlanta United, on the night, first night of my cruise, that was the game three, the deciding game of who goes on in the playoffs. And Atlanta United beat Inter Miami. I'm there with all these Messi fans in Royal Caribbean Messi jerseys as the lone Atlanta United fan. Well, me and my wife were the lone Atlanta United fans, all happy. And other people were like, did Messi do well? And we're like, well, he scored, but his team lost. Okay.
I didn't follow a word of that, but the pics look great.
Yeah. So I posted a picture of me like next to like all the Messi jerseys with the thumbs down. And there we go. So
now, you know, we're running over, so we got to get to OLR. But yep. Next week we'll have to talk about how you allowed yourself to cheat in Pikmin Bloom during the cruise.
You benefited from my cheating.
Exploit.
It was great cheating. We'll talk about that next week. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Well, I will annoy pod culture again with sports ball talk and VR talk, and I will annoy him a lot. Maybe not. We'll see. So, yes, next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, or you can go on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, and interact with us throughout the week. Or you can find me on Blue Sky, where the skies are blue, at bobbyblackwolf.com is my actual username there. We also have the @vognetwork.com account there. There's actually a starter pack, so you can actually find other people from our community that are active on Blue Sky that want to be included on it. If you want to be included on it, let us know. And you can follow some members of our community there. And now it actually posts when we go live, and hopefully soon it's going to post when the podcast goes up. That's not up there yet, but you can get our live alerts by following that over there. So if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this work without the chatters who go above and beyond. Thank you so much to those of you who do subscribe here on Twitch. Mike Deft resubscribed saying, let's go VOG Sunday. Thank you so much for that. Sean322 resubscribed saying, woo, 24 for the 24 months. Thank you so much for that. And Dark Sakura resubscribed at tier 2. Thank you so much for that. I am going to hit the button so we can get out of here and get OLR going. But thank you so much for being here. I all the buttons worked, it looked like. So I remembered how to podcast. It was great. I'm going to go play some Tetris later this week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.